Chapter 37. It was a shadowy dream, the kind he could never remember when he woke up. He was searching for someone in the bowels of a deserted ship. Dust and gloom obscured his vision, like the dive on the Eagle, green river algae and russet silt. His quarry drifted in front of him, blurred, always beyond reach. He hesitated and tried to focus through the gloom, but the form taunted him, beckoning him closer. Then a high-pitched, ringing sound went off in his ear, and he floated out of the dream and groped for the telephone.
"Dirk?"
came a cheery voice from a throat he wanted to throttle.
"Yes." "Got some news for you."
"Huh?"
"You asleep? This is St. Julian."
"Perlmutter?"
"Wake up. I found something."
Then Pitt switched on the bedlight and sat up.
"Okay, I'm listening."
"I've received a written report from my friends in Korea. They went through Korean shipyard records. Guess what? The Belle Chasse was never scrapped." Pitt threw back the covers and dropped his feet on the floor.
"Go on."
"Sorry I took so long getting back to you, but this is the most incredible maritime puzzle I've ever seen. For 30 years, somebody has been playing musical chairs with ships like you wouldn't believe."
"Try me."
"First, let me ask you a question," said Perlmutter. "The name on the stern of the ship you found in Alaska?"
"The pilot town."
"Were the painted letters framed by welded beading?"
Pitt thought back.
"As I recall, it was faded paint. The raised edges must have been ground away." Perlmutter uttered a heavy sigh of relief over the phone.
"I was hoping you'd say that."
"Why?"
"Your suspicions are confirmed. The San Marino, the Belle Chasse, and the pilot town are indeed one and the same ship."
"Damn," Pitt said, suddenly excited. "How'd you make the link?"
"By discovering what happened to the genuine pilot town," said Perlmutter with a dramatic inflection.
"My sources found no record of a Belle Chasse being scrapped in the shipyards of Pusan. So I played a hunch and asked them to check out any other yards along the coast. They turned up a lead in the port of Incheon. Shipyard foremen are interesting guys. They never forget a ship, especially when they've junked. They act hard-nosed about it, but deep down they're sad to see a tired old vessel pull into their dock for the last time. Anyway, one old retired foreman talked for hours about the good old days, a real gold mine of ship lore."
"What did he say?" Pitt asked impatiently.
"He recalled in great detail when he was in charge of the crew who converted the San Marino from a cargo transport into an ore carrier renamed the Belle Chasse."
"But the shipyard records?"
"Obviously falsified by the shipyard owners, who, by the way, happened to be our old friends, the Sosan Trading Company. The foreman also remembered breaking up the original pilot town. It looks like Sosan Trading, or the shady outfit behind it, hijacked the San Marino and its cargo and killed the crew. Then they modified the cargo holds to carry ore, documented it under a different name, and sent it tramping around the seas."
"Where does the pilot town come in?" asked Pitt.
"She was a legitimate purchase by Sosan Trading. You may be interested to know the International Maritime Crime Center has her listed with 10 suspected customs violations.
A hell of a high number.
It's thought she smuggled everything from plutonium to Libya, rebel arms to Argentina, secret American technology to Russia, you name it. She sailed under a smart bunch of operators. The violations were never proven. On 5 occasions, she was known to have left port with clandestine cargo but was never caught unloading it. When her hull and engines finally wore out, she was conveniently scrapped and all records destroyed."
"But why claim her as sunk if it was really the San Marino, alias the Belle Chasse, they scuttled?"
"Because questions might be raised regarding the Belle Chasse's pedigree. The pilot town had solid documentation, so they claimed it was she that sank in 1979 along with a non-existent cargo, and demanded a fat settlement from the insurance companies."
Pitt glanced down at his toes and wiggled them.
"Did the old foreman talk about other ship conversions for Sosan Trading?" "He mentioned 2, a tanker and a container ship," Perlmutter answered. "But they were both refits and not conversions. Their new names were the Boothville and the Venice."
"What were their former names?"
"According to my friend's report, the foreman claimed that all previous identification had been removed."
"Looks like somebody built themselves a fleet out of hijacked ships.
A cheap and dirty way of doing business."
"Anything new on the parent company?" Pitt asked.
"Still a closed door," Perlmutter replied. "The foreman did say, however, some big shot used to show up to inspect the ships when they were completed and ready to sail."
Pitt stood up.
What else?
That's about it. There has to be something, a physical description, a name, something. Wait a minute while I check through the report again. Pitt could hear the rustle of papers and Perlmutter mumbling to himself. Okay, here it is. The VIP always arrived in a big black limousine. No make mentioned. He was tall for a Korean. Korean. That's what it says, replied Perlmutter. And he spoke Korean with an American accent. The shadowed figure in Pitt's dream moved a step closer. St. Julian, you do good work. Sorry I couldn't take it all the way. You bought us a first down. Nail the bastard, Dirk. I intend to. If you need me, I'm more than willing. Thank you, St. Julian. Pitt walked to the closet, threw on a brief kimono, and knotted the sash. Then he padded into the kitchen, treated himself to a glass of guava juice laced with dark rum, and dialed a number on the phone. After several rings, an indifferent voice answered, "Yeah? Hiram, crank up your computer. I've got a new problem for you."